Welcome again to the Private GP Podcast. I'm Alia Shakir, Managing Director at the Walk-in Clinic. I am here today with one of our great GPs, Dr. Mohammed Mosseini. Hello again.
Hi, Alia.
How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Today we are talking about type 2 diabetes and the pre-diabetic condition and diet and nutrition tips if you have type 2 diabetes or are pre-diabetic or are predisposed to diabetes. Doctor, we've recently seen notification come into our inboxes of a shortage of the semaglutide medication for patients with type 2 diabetes, as people have been using this sort of off license for weight loss and so on. Obviously, it's concerning for people with type 2 diabetes if they can't get hold of the medications they need. And nothing can replace the need for medication, but I guess we can support ourselves as much as possible by taking as many lifestyle, making as many lifestyle improvements as we can and following the right diet and nutrition. So I thought this would be an opportune time to have this conversation in light of those medication shortages. And also, I guess, people who are we're having an increased number of diagnoses of type 2 diabetes, often incidental at the clinic, silent diabetes that people have developed over time that they might not be aware of and might have taken them by surprise. So, you know, in the spirit of education and learning, we want to improve all of our knowledge in this area. So, Doctor, what would you say are the three most important changes that someone with type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetes can make to their diet?
Yes, as you said, diabetes is a condition which sometimes goes unnoticed and without any symptoms. And often during health checks, we come across borderline blood sugars and sort of the need for making changes to diet and lifestyle. I guess the principles are to try to reduce the calorie intake. That's the major thing. And there are various ways of doing that. One is to sort of having a smaller portion and sort of swapping or replacing some of the things that you are in the habit of eating with things which has less calories. So for example, increasing portions of vegetables, sort of non-starchy vegetables at your main meals usually helps to increase the sort of the food that you eat in terms of the volume with low calorie instead of trying to sort of fill in your stomach with higher calorie food. If you think about the mechanism, usually when you start eating, it takes roughly around 20 minutes for the stomach to send a message to the brain to say that I'm full now, so that's enough. And during this 20 minutes, one of the things that you can do is try to chew a bit more. So some people say count. It may sound a bit strange, but if you count the amount of time that you chew a bite, and if you think about counting to 10 and chew each bite 10 times, that will sort of slow down your sort of the speed of the food which you enter your body. If you eat faster, naturally you're going to eat more. So these are the simple things that that you can think of doing in terms of reducing the calorie intake and also replacing some of the food material with other less harmful and less calorie sort of food.
Okay, and when we talk about sort of foods that are better to reduce or avoid for somebody with type 2 diabetes, what would you say are the main foods that people should be aware of in terms of the quantity of their intake?
So a general principle is less sugar, less salt, and less fat. And if if you think about the type of sort of sugar that we eat, replacing some of the food items like white rice or white bread with the wholemeal version of it, or pasta, that usually tends to double the amount of fiber that we take. And fiber is usually something which helps the digestion and also is a filling sort of agent as well. So
because some people, when doctors say sugar, people might think, oh, they mean that white granular stuff that I put in my tea. Mm-hmm. But that's not what doctors mean when they say sugar. They mean that, definitely, and everything that contains it. But they also mean things like certain fruits, like bananas and mangoes and grapes. And they also mean simple carbohydrates, simple starches, don't they? Because that converts to sugar in the bloodstream very easily. Is that right?
Yeah. So there's a concept which is called glycemic index. And glycemic index, the maximum is sort of set as 100 for just pure sugar. The lower the glycemic index, when the blood sugar goes up slower and it comes down slower. So it takes longer for the body to digest and process that. So as you said, there are certain fruits which have got, as we call them, high glycemic index, like of banana, mango, and grapes. And there are others which have got less, like some apricots and strawberries, and which are sort of, in a sense, better sort of options if you're diabetic and you want to enjoy soft fruit as well.
Yeah, I was very delighted when I learned that cherries have a low glycemic index. Right. It made me very happy.
That's right. Yeah. So it is important. A simple Google search can tell you what carbohydrates are of high glycemic index. One thing that people often say when they come to me and say, oh, but I eat healthy, I eat cereal for breakfast and I eat cornflakes, but one of the sort of highest glycemic index cereals are actually cornflakes. If you want to eat cereals, it's important to know which ones are better. So Special K is one of the ones which is known to have lower glycemic index, as well as things like porridge oats and also the All Bran, all the other type of cereals which you would be able to enjoy and also have lower glycemic index.
Yeah, so it seems like there's always a good alternative.
Absolutely.
So that people don't feel deprived. Because really what we're talking about here is a long-term, lifelong way of eating.
Absolutely.
So you have to make peace with it. It can't feel difficult. It can't feel too restrictive, right?
That's right, absolutely. So diabetes is a condition that I often say to patients, whatever I can do for you as a doctor, consists of around 30% of the whole thing which is needed. The rest of the 70% lies with you and is your contribution to this. And it's nothing that a doctor can simply do without patient contributions. It's absolutely essential that the patients are aware of this. The other thing is, to remember is if you think about any lifestyle changes you want to make, they only work if you persevere with them and also, like you said, make peace with them. So it's a matter of changing the way you look at your diet, the way you eat, and basically in general your lifestyle.
Yeah, I think there are some culprits, aren't there, that just need to be avoided.
Yeah.
But learning to make, for example, sugar-free baked goods yourself, or trying to replace, as you said, white bread and white rice with things with more fiber as alternatives, like brown rice and so on, or sort of those nice seeded, proper, brown breads.
Absolutely.
And things like that. But also, I think generally, I've been advised definitely to just look at my general intake of carbohydrates and change how I eat generally so that I'm eating more, say, protein and fresh vegetables rather than including, say, bread, pasta, potatoes, everything in my daily diet. And that brings me on, because we hear a lot online now about the keto diet.
Sure.
Do you think a keto diet is suitable for people with type 2 diabetes and pre-diabetes? Or do you think that, you know, those complex carbohydrates like the brown rice and the sweet potatoes and things remain important?
Yeah, I think the complex carbohydrates are very important. Having said that, there are some evidence that keto diet is working well. The American Association of Diabetes approves that, you know, low carb diets and high protein things like keto diet are quite helpful in terms of helping people with pre-diabetic states and diabetes to manage their condition. Generally speaking, keto diet is about switching your fuel from glucose to fat. So when you eat less glucose, the body starts processing its reserve fat, and by burning them produces a product called ketone, and that's that ketone is what which will affect the weight loss, which is the ultimate outcome for anyone with diabetes who is overweight.
Right, very interesting. There's also been talk recently. I've been reading, in those medical alerts that come through to us, about the importance of actually avoiding artificial sweeteners as well as sugar, which really took me by surprise. Because I'll be honest with you, I do rather enjoy the occasional Diet Coke. So I was a bit upset by this, but. I mean, what are your thoughts on this? Is this something for people to take seriously?
There's been recently quite topical that aspartame, which is an artificial sweetener in things like Diet Coke and basically diet drinks, and some artificial sweeteners that is used for even baking cakes and things like that could be. I emphasize could be associated with cancer in human, particularly liver cancer, but certainly the study concludes that there's more study and research is needed. So we are at the stage that we think it could be carcinogenic or create cancer, but there's no 100% certainty about that. What I would say, if you enjoy occasional Diet Coke, I think it is important to continue doing that. Naturally, when you eat the artificial sweeteners in something, they're not on their own, because if you take, for example, the Diet Coke, it doesn't have much calorie, but if you think of that in a bakery where there's lots of other stuff like starch and fat and other things which have got high calories in a product, then in that sense, eating the artificial sweeteners could be harmful for you, because at the same time you're eating other harmful food material.
That's a really interesting aspect I didn't even think of, because the thing that I read, what they were saying is that your brain detects, or some whatever your body detects, a sweet taste, and so it gets ready to deal with this sugar that it thinks it's about to get.
Absolutely.
Right, so all the insulin gets flowing, and then obviously, it's an artificial sweetener, which isn't something that we've ever evolved to understand. So it's an artificial sweetener. There's no sugar. And so the insulin's just swimming around in the bloodstream with nothing to grab onto, nothing to do. And I think what they were saying is that that could also add to insulin resistance. Is that true?
So the mechanism for type 2 diabetes is that down-regulation of insulin receptors. So that means that there will be less available insulin receptors to be used. It is sort of known that the artificial sweeteners could alter the normal bacteria in the bowels, and with that mechanism sometimes could create sort of insulin resistance and be harmful. So I think I would say probably the message is make sure that you stick to the general rule of moderation.
Mm-hmm.
So if you enjoy occasional product which has got artificial sweetener, it doesn't mean that you're going to get cancer the following day, or it's something to make yourself worry too much. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we're human beings, and part of the sort of things that we enjoy in life is food. And it's important that from time to time we give ourselves a break and make sure that, you know, we do things that we enjoy.
Yeah, I think that's a really important message. Because, you know, to conclude, it sounds like what you're saying is, if you have type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetes, think about the long term. Think about how you can maintain a diet that you can continue to enjoy by making small adjustments, really. It's not like to be extremely rigid or night and day about it. Think about, for example, how you can replace one type of carbohydrate with a more complex type. Think about slowing down your eating, as you said, reducing your portions of the things that you might enjoy having, but just eat less of it. Use the rule of moderation, as you say. And be aware of the concept of glycemic index and focus on a diet that is in a low glycemic index.
That is correct.
That, to me, I think, is a doable and manageable way forward.
Absolutely.
For most people. And I think what can happen is patients can go to some doctors who might be a bit scaremongering or a little bit, extreme.
Absolutely.
About the advice. Yeah. Being given, and it can really put them off and make them feel hopeless.
Absolutely. If you set the bars too high, you are not going to achieve that. So, first of all, whatever you do is achievable. If you are an inactive person, we don't expect you to run a marathon in 2 weeks' time. So very, very small changes, likes of 10 minutes regular home-based exercises and things like that to start with, and gradually build up on that. It is very important, as you said, to make the changes gradual, but persevere with them and be persistent.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mustaine. I'm sure that's going to be really valuable advice for so many people.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.